Good morning. It is 7:46 here on the Mighty 690. It is time for our Green Side Up program with guests from K-State Extension. We have David Rowling from the Wildcat Extension District, and we have Clayton Lester from Cherokee County. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
All right. So here we are as we get ready for, it's fair time in Oklahoma. I know that's not as big a deal here. We're on the Kansas side of things, but this is like starting to get into their time. And maybe they're smarter by, you know, you wouldn't normally think, you know, it'd be this hot, but yeah, it still is.
I think most years they probably are smarter waiting until it cools off a little bit.
Yeah, I know. But so all that's going on, we have across the border there. But I know that as we get into November, I know, David, you said you've got a event that's coming up.
Yeah, on November 3rd over in Girard, I'm going to be hosting a coyote biology and management workshop. Drew Ricketts, our state wildlife specialist, will be our guest speaker for that workshop, and dinner will be provided. It's free to attend. We just ask that you RSVP to help us plan for the meal, and folks can do that by calling 620-784-5337. It is going to start about 6 o'clock, and that's just going to start with the meal. So if folks are a little late because of getting off work, we completely understand and encourage you to still come on out. It's going to be a great workshop. Drew always provides a lot of great information about how to manage coyotes if you own livestock and maybe have some predator concerns or issues, but also a lot of good information about understanding the biology of coyotes and also the kind of the dynamics of a coyote pack.
All right, very good. Well, it sounds like a very interesting seminar there, so hope folks can take advantage of that. So we're going to start out first in our segment here with Davin, and I know you wanted to talk a little bit about fall wildlife considerations.
Yeah, so it doesn't feel like fall yet, and
it
I don't
tomorrow.
Think...
not, I mean, it may feel like
hopefully,
June tomorrow.
Yeah. Hopefully it'll be a little cooler tomorrow, but thinking ahead to the cooler weather, one wildlife consideration I wanted to talk about before we get into that really cold winter weather eventually is bird feeders. So bird feeders are a great option if you're into bird watching and want to attract birds to your backyard, and if you're looking for a way to help wildlife out during the winter months when food isn't as readily available. Setting up a bird feeder in your yard is a great way to do that, and if you put one out now, if you haven't had one before, and you keep food in it consistently, then the birds will learn that that is an available food source to them, and they'll continue to visit it throughout the winter. So I know some people that are really into bird watching get into, you know, specific bird seeds for different types of birds. And of course, different birds prefer different styles of feeders. But if you're just generally looking to help birds out, not attract a specific one, then just a general bird seed mix that you can pick up at most hardware stores or at Walmart will work great. So a lot of times these have black oil sunflower seeds and millet as two of the main ingredients, and those are two of kind of birds' favorite food by a lot of different bird species. And also having a bird bath or kind of a water there for birds is another great way to help them as we go into the colder months, where eventually water will start to freeze, so it's harder for them to find those natural water sources. And then switching gears a little bit, I've been starting to get some soil test results in from food plots. So people that are getting ready to plant those fall food plots, which is usually a popular option for people that are avid deer hunters, there's still time to get those soil test results for your food plots back. Usually it takes about 2 weeks once we send the soil sample to the lab, get those test results back, and then I'll write fertilizer recommendations for them. So if that's something you're interested in, we need at least 2 cups of soil from each plot. And we also have soil probes available in our offices that folks can borrow for free. That gets a really good core sample of soil, so it makes for a more accurate sample.
Well, that's very good. We're talking with Dave and Rolling right now, and she is discussing here some of those different fall wildlife considerations. Anything else that we should be thinking about here as we eventually get into some of those cooler months?
Yeah, one other thing that I wanted to mention that could be a project as it gets into those cooler months is Drew Ricketts recently released a series of videos on social media. I believe they're also available on YouTube. And they recently did a study on white-tailed deer habitat management, more in the Flint Hills region, but it also applies to us here. And a lot of times folks think that cedar trees and having a lot of cedar trees on your property makes really good habitat for white-tailed deer. And this study actually kind of talks about why that's not the case, which I thought was pretty interesting. And one of the main reasons is that when cedars really grow up, they get such a thick canopy cover that there's no understory. There's none of the grasses and smaller forbs and shrubs growing underneath the cedar trees that white-tailed deer feed on, and that also provide really important cover for the fawns as they're growing up. So if you're kind of thinking of maybe some projects to do in the cooler months and you have some cedar trees on your property that might need clearing out, that's one important thing to consider. So it's a really good land management practice, and it will also help improve habitat for white-tailed deer. And there's also the saying, it kind of in the range management group, of be a leader, kill a cedar. So I think that's kind of a fun one. And also out of Oklahoma State University, they've been doing some research and have found that reducing the amount of cedars on land will also help decrease the tick population. And I know ticks have been a topic of a lot of conversation lately, along with the diseases that they can carry.
Well, that's a great reminder. And David did have a wildlife question for you. So I'll talk a little bit more during open line, but we actually had a hummingbird that crashed into the station yesterday.
Oh no.
And it was like on its back out in the porch area.
Yeah.
And so what is the best course of action if you find a bird that is something that has done something like that?
The best course of action is, especially right now when it's so hot, is to flip it over, help get it back on its feet, and put it in a shaded area where it has some shelter. So if there's other, you know, maybe like cats around or something, hopefully it has a little bit of protection. And then also provide it, so for hummingbirds, you would want to provide it sugar water or some of the hummingbird feed, because they're different than all other birds, just so it has something to eat to help it kind of get back up and going. But for other birds, just providing them with some regular water,
sure,
to make sure they stay cool.
Do you know if hummingbirds actually drink water, or is it mostly the nectar that
For hummingbirds, that's why hummingbirds, especially once they know that, hey, there's a hummingbird feeder at this location, they really rely on that, because they have a super fast metabolism, kind of goes along with how fast their wings beat. So they go through a lot of food, and I can't remember it, the exact number of like minutes at the moment, but they need to eat pretty regularly.
Yeah. Well, good. It did turn out good, because eventually I put it in the plant there so it could have something to kind of sit on.
Uh-huh.
And eventually it did fly off.
So, oh, awesome.
It was a good end of the story, but I'll tell more about it on open line here today. But so yeah, just wanted to pick your brain on that.
Yeah. And in more, serious cases, people can call us, and there's a couple places around Kansas, none super local, but that do kind of like bird rehabilitation. So especially in the bigger birds, if it has, you know, an injured wing, something more serious.
Sure.
We can put folks in contact with the place where they can get some help for that bird.
Good reminder there. So, Clayton, what are we going to be talking about in our next segment?
We're going to be talking about forage sampling today.
Okay, very good. And we have all that coming up as we continue. We are going to also, of course, want to remind you if folks do have to run, and David, if they have questions for you, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
They can reach me by calling our Altamont office. That number is 620-784-5337.
All right, well, we appreciate it, and we're looking forward to another segment here with K-State Extension on the way, and the Green Setup program brought to you by Green Acres right here in Coffeyville. And on the way next, we'll have a check of Fox News local news and get you right back into Green Setup next here on the Mighty 690. Good morning. It is 8:11 here on the Mighty 690, and it is time to continue along with our Green Setup program. We have Clayton Lester with Cherokee County Extension and David Rolling back in studio from the Wildcat District. Good morning once again.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. So, Clayton, here we are with the growing season sort of continuing. I don't know, technically speaking.
Right.
How have the – I know corn is probably pretty much about wrapped up over there in Cherokee County, right?
Yeah, for the most part, what I've saw and – talk to farmers, it looks like corn's pretty well about wrapped up, and beans, they're trying to grow as much as they can with the lack of water and everything, but other than that, corn looks like it's harvested. So.
Sure. And of course, I know that it seems kind of wild to be thinking about, you know, winter wheat. It's not time yet, but I mean, that will be kind of the next thing, right?
Exactly. So that'll be coming up probably the first part of October, span over that whole month and everything like that. So it's coming right around the corner, that's for sure.
We just hope it actually rains.
Exactly. Get a little bit of ground moisture put back in. So that way it kind of gives those seeds something to help germinate. So
have you gotten any numbers at all from this corn harvest? I know a lot of folks kind of excited. It seems like the real winter this year.
Exactly. Not off the top of my head, I don't have any numbers yet, so maybe the next time I'm on the air I can get those numbers and we can kind of talk about that a little bit.
Yeah,
but yeah, I'd say yeah, it's for sure the winter compared this year. So the conditions fell in pretty right for it, so yeah. Seemed like
absolutely. Well, another thing that folks are very busy with still is getting that hay all squared away, and I know kind of on that topic you wanted to talk a little bit about forage sampling.
Yeah, exactly. So for the most part, looks like kind of a little bit of hay and starting to wrap down a little bit, except for some of those later grasses. But for the most part, so forage sampling is one of those things that's starting to take place. We're starting to get a few that comes into the office. So if any of you guys out there doesn't really do any forage sampling, this would be kind of great. Get a little bit of information on it and stuff like that. So forage sampling is a use of information to determine different factors about hay and silage that help create a market value for that hay, so it gives you a little bit of information whenever you're going to be selling it to another producer or another user of it, and it's also helpful for livestock purposes. So in a sense of way, it takes those thousands of pounds of hay over those course of those samples and has a wide variety of different plant material that goes into it and gives a thumb size sample. So it reflects the leaf stem ratio, the legumes and grass mixes, and weeds within that particular cutting. So a lot of times people take samples out in the field. A good rule of thumb is take 10% of how many bales are out in the field. So if you bale about 100 bales out in your field, take about 10% of that, so about 10 hay bales or so around there. Or you can take a few more. They get a good, accurate mix in there as well. But sampling by forage lot, it can be a little bit trickier, especially if you're going to be taking a sample or somebody else is going to be taking a sample for you, knowing how that hay came in off the field. So taking a few more samples can be pretty beneficial that as well. But sampling in a forage lot, it's always best to kind of keep your hay separated. So if you got some Bermuda, kind of keeping it away from your fescue and stuff like that. Not in a sense of a bad way, but kind of to help you keep you organized and stuff like that. That way when you go to take those samples, you pull from the right rows and you don't get any blended results that way. But also taking those samples at optimum time. So collecting those hay or silage samples as close to the feeding time or cells possible. So sampling immediately before feeding accounts for any heating or weathering loss that may have occurred during storage. It's impractical This is impractical when marking hay out of the field for lots moving through the channels. So a lot of different hay sources out there. For silage, some producers sample and test forage as they go into storage, while others collect samples as they grab while they're feeding, which is a pretty great method there. That way you can know exactly how fresh it is and everything like that. Exactly what the nutrient level is and the total digestible nutrients of that hay bale is.
Sure. So what are we looking at when we're actually, you know, what are we using to take that sample?
So we're going to be using a soil probe. So selecting advice to take those core samples. So a soil sample probe can range anywhere from 12 to 24 inches long. But on average, we take those soil probes and get a good measurement about 15 inches into those bales. So those soil probes, those hay probes are about 3/8 to 1 inch in diameter. And it's got a cutter tip on the end of it as it, you use it on a electric drill is what I'm trying to say. Brushless electric drill. If you used a brush drill, it might kind of get hot and kind of freeze up those brushes inside the drill.
Okay.
But a brushless drill, it'll kind of help expel that heat out of it and those brushes won't fuse to the inside of those magnets and everything.
Never thought about that.
So yeah, we'll allow for overheating there, but taking those samples off that 10%. A great place to find a hay probe is your local K-State Extension office, where we can sit down and help you figure out what you're trying to feed, or if you're going to try to sell it to another producer. So try to help you figure out those values that you're looking for and figure out exactly what test that needs to be done for you. So we can sit down and help you with that. On average, whenever you send off a hay sample, I'm still thinking about all right. soil from the Davins.
I messed y'all up.
Whenever I'm thinking about a probe, I'm thinking about soil. But when I'm thinking about those hay samples, whenever we send them off, we will allow for a good 2-week period to allow them to come back and everything like that. But that's something that we can definitely sit down and help you with there.
So does it matter, is there any different method when you're doing, like, big round bales versus, you know, anyone who might still, you see some square bales out there still.
Right.
So is there any different method on sampling?
Sampling the side of a hay bale, you really want to go in from the side of the bale instead of taking those samples in from the top. Of course, when they're packed in, you know, they got those flakes of those hay whenever it's packed in there real tight. From a hay bale, you kind of want to take it down towards the side, to the bottomish part of that hay bale, and allow the water to kind of drain off and where it doesn't necessarily go into that side of that hay bale as well. That way it kind of helps from that water getting in there and starting to spoil that bale as well.
Sure.
So
now, I mean, when you look at those results coming back, are there going to be different nutritional requirements, say if someone has cattle versus horses or something like that?
It definitely can be, and that's something I can sit down and really help you consider. So each animal, they take different nutrient requirements and stuff like that. Some animals like to have more protein, or it depends. For like cattle, if you're trying to feed them out, you want to have trying to push them a little bit harder, they get them to that optimal weight before you want to sell them. So a lot of different factors play in as well. But definitely trying to figure out exactly what package to go with. That way we know exactly what we're trying to do whenever we're sending off those samples.
Sure. We're speaking with Clayton Lester from Cherokee County Extension. And what about when it comes to silage and baleage for sampling those?
So silage and baleage. So producers can either sample chop silage crops as they're stored or remove them from the storage to feeding. So store sampling silage, collect a representative handful or two of that chopped forage from several loads coming from a particular field at harvest. So mix the samples thoroughly and place them in a sealable plastic bag, so squeezing out any excess air if possible, to store the samples in a freezer and submit the frozen samples to the laboratory. So a more accurate representation of the silage quality is when samples are taken during that feeding time, whenever you're going to be feeding them, or right before you'll start transitioning to feeding them as well. So you want to collect those samples at that time of the feeding. So grab samples both morning and evening when feeding a new silage lot. So avoid sampling spoiled silage from the top of a bunker or from that transition layer between those lots in an upright or a bunker silo. So if you're going to be storming a tall bunker or that long traditional type silo bunker.
Sure. Now, when it comes to the regular bales, something you mentioned, you're looking at like about 20 different samples. Is that what you said?
Somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. It really depends on how many bales you bale out in your field. Usually on 10%, so 10% of however usually it makes is okay. A good rule of thumb.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, I know people think, oh, that's a lot, but, you know, it's right. At the end of the day, it should be, if you're going to do it, might as well do it right.
Exactly. And when you're grabbing those out in the field, always best to go around to all different parts of the field because, you know, your ground's diverse, so that makes your grass pretty diverse and what that nutrient of that grass is going to be.
Sure. Sure. And so, of course, anything else that we should know here when it comes to this topic?
More or less, if you have any questions, you can just kind of reach out to the local extension office. If you ever need any assistance in taking those hay samples, I'm more than happy to come out and help any producer take those samples as well. But that's about it, more or less.
Now, where do, you know, we get some of these USDA, you know, forage quality results and that sort of thing. You know, where do those numbers come from?
That's a great question. Maybe that's an accumulative of what comes in through these big laboratories. Like, a lot of the times we send them off to SDK labs. So maybe it's a cumulative of what they kind of get in through their labs, more or less, or maybe what K-State gets in mm-hmm. through there and how they kind of accumulate those numbers is what I'd be guessing is how sure. they get those. So.
Sure. Well, it'll be interesting. I know that folks have been a little maybe worried about the quality of this year's forage just because of the weather.
Yeah, definitely a lack of rain and folks are starting to feed hay a lot sooner. So.
Yeah.
I just wanted to add to kind of tag on to Clayton because I know over here in Labette County and Montgomery County, I think we've been a little bit drier than you have in Cherokee County. And people have had concerns about nitrate and some prussic acid concerns. But if people have concerns for nitrates when it comes to hay, especially maybe they grew Sedan grass, for example, or have more Johnson grass than desired, they can also get it tested for nitrates.
Well, that is really good because otherwise you're just guessing and that can yeah. be a real problem.
Yeah, and we also have quick tests for nitrate and prussic acid in our office, and that will just tell you if it's present or not, and then if it is present, we can send it off to the lab and find out the exact amounts.
That's great. And then you have, of course, for the Wildcat District, those hay probes available as well?
Yes, we have them available as well in all four counties.
Okay, fantastic. Well, we do appreciate you coming on by. David, you want to remind us one more time on your upcoming event here that's on the way here in a few months?
Yeah, coming up in November, I will have a coyote biology and management workshop in Girard on November 3rd. It is free to attend and dinner will be provided. It will be at our Girard Extension office and that will start at 6 p.m.
Fantastic. And so, Clayton, if folks do want to get a hold of you over there in Cherokee County, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, definitely. Our phone number is 620-429-3849.
All right. Anna Davin, what about you?
You can reach me at the Altamont office. That number is 620-784-5337.
All right. That's our Green Setup program today. We appreciate you both of you coming on by.
Yeah, thank you for having
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having us.
All right. And with that, we'll get into Open Line here in just a few minutes. It's on the way here on the Mighty 690.